Library computer, data being received.
A thrilling and tragic thing happened this morning on the front porch.
To be using a new word in my writing is to me a very difficult thing.
You know, like everything feels so serious. By our own doing, I think, a lot of the times. We need to be able to laugh. It's all part of it. Okay, here we go. All right, welcome to the Ruth Stone podcast. I am actually not. I'm sorry, my pits are like sweating profusely. All right, let's try once more. Hello and welcome to the Ruth Stone House podcast. I am Leanne Ruel, a colleague and friend of Bianca Stone, and I wanted to flip the podcast on its head today and ask her some questions about her new essay in Plume on the topic of poetry comics. So, I am excited to talk with you, Bianca.
I'm so excited to talk with you too, Leanne. Thank you so much for coming out of the podcast and doing this. This is going to be definitely an ongoing conversation. I mean, not about me, but between us.
Yeah.
Because there's lots of stuff that we like to talk about that's relevant to everyone's life.
It's so integrated, and I am just so I'm really stoked to get this opportunity to ask you these explicit questions about the essay and about this genre of poetry comics, which I think is often misunderstood, or maybe misunderstood because there isn't a tangible or specific way of understanding it, and that confuses people. So I just want to talk a little bit about how fluid actually poetry comics are and how they sort of interlace between so many other facets of art and life. And
absolutely. Yeah, I think for me, I wrote this essay to try and fall in love with poetry comics again because I was feeling very negative about them. And I just wasn't doing them and thinking about it. And it certainly worked to do this. I'm full-fledged back into it. I've always felt a little dissatisfied and tired of the way I was talking about them in the past, the way other people have been talking about them. And I really wanted to explore why I gave any shit about them at all. Because I feel like there was something really important or has always been important to me about the combination of text and image. And I started off the essay with talking about finding one of my little books that I made when I was little, which was a sort of pseudo childhood poetry comic. I would say that my friend Alexander Rothman, who makes poetry comics, he calls them comics poetry. He defines them, or he says about them that there's some paratactic order that underlies all poetry, where we hold a thing in the mind, turn to another, hold it alongside the first. Something bounces between them. They complement each other, contradict each other, or reinforce each other, or change each other. They resonate. And since we're talking about a hybrid form, it's worth saying that this is how successful hybridization works too, in terms of its constituent parts. Really, it's the foundation of human thought. We know by comparing I and thou. So, poetry comics, it asks, what else can comics do? Yeah, so it's, you know, on the very base level, it's simply using a poetic text with images in a usually sequential order, or to using just images in a more, rather than narrative way that you would see in a graphic novel, a more poetic way. But also the interest comes simply in the fact that there are many similarities in the way that comics work and the way that poetry works, just in general. So there's a lot of different avenues to take when thinking about the combination of text and image. But, you know, we're seeing a lot more interaction of text and image with the internet nowadays. So I think it's a time when we're excited about the idea of seeing more of it. And poets like Claudia Rankine, who virtually use not every book, but almost every book has images in it. And she also plays with the bending of what makes a poem and what makes a prose poem and an essay so wonderfully that there's lots of different manifestations of what I would call under the umbrella poetry comics that actually don't look like comics at all, but simply are an instance of text and image working in tandem, and is certainly an issue for me about dualism, the dyad.
Yeah, it seems like there's just this sort of employment of like every potential mechanism that you can use in order to create something visually, emotionally, and just thought provoking. And yeah, you're right. There's so many examples of text and image that don't look like comics at all, but yet evoke that same sort of intrigue, I guess, and inevitable introspection, which I think is maybe what you're hoping to achieve in creating poetry comics, is like just to have somebody sit back and be introspective about what they're seeing, and then hopefully some additional thoughts or feelings will flood them in relation. And I love what you said about, who was the person you quoted again? I'm sorry.
Claudia Rankine.
Your friend.
Oh, Alexander Rothman.
Yeah, that he said that it was the foundation of human thought, this comparison, which I think really feeds into, I think, a lot of what we talk about and probably will digress into during the course of this this podcast. But absolutely. Yeah, just this notion of comparison ourselves with the other, text with image, our small finite space with the larger universe at hand. So it's just also interesting. Have you read any of that book that I sent you? It's okay that you haven't.
Honestly, I haven't, because I keep putting it in a different room and then I don't have it next to me.
It's like, if you have so much else to read too, and somebody's...
Well, yeah, I'm reading like so much right now, just out of pure love of... It feels so good to be in love with reading again.
It does feel like voracious appetite.
Mm-hmm. It's like such a...
kind of crops up every once in a while. It's not always there, honestly. But...
Oh, God, no. I feel like I didn't read at all for the past few years. Except fantasy novels, which are like... No, it's like... That's like eating potato chips.
I sent you that book, The Phenomenon of Man, by Teilhard de Chardin, because I just felt like it connected so much with like what we talk about when we're like alone in a room together.
Yeah.
And like absolutely. This discussion about human evolution and what that actually means like now. And one of like the nexus of his discussions in this book is that like the next level of human evolution is unfolding the spirit into matter, which is like pretty much speaks to what we're trying to get at in our personal discussions, but also I think in poetry and in poetry comics and in like almost every art form. I feel like, and this might be just like delusional thinking, but I feel like in that way, like poets and artists are like a contributing catalyst for the next stage of human evolution.
Oh yeah, absolutely. They already have been. Yeah.
Yeah. No, totally. But I guess like I talk about now, and what I really mean is like this tiny speck, which could be like 1,000 years in the scope of like mm-hmm. the existence of right. humanity or in the world.
Okay. Yeah.
But
I mean, it brings up a lot of just a lot of the things that I've been reading about in different areas of different genres, philosophy, psychology, poetry, theory. But certainly there's this sort of like crisis of self that is so heightened right now with our radically changed society and the pandemic, that I think we're just more confronted with it, more aware of its implications than we ever have been before in the last generations anyway.
Yeah.
But this the spirit made into matter idea, and when I think of, I mean, there's just so many ways to take spirit as well. I mean, that's such a interesting word, and I feel like is tied to our the word self as well, which is a complicated concept. But the point being that it's not, our sense of self and spirit is not as immutable as we thought it is. The reality of this self is not as cut and dry as your day-to-day average human being would think it. And we can't really evolve without exploring the more subtle and undefinable elements of self and existence, human existence, with our sort of logical, linear way of, it's in a way scientific way of thinking about things. We have to... Yeah. Also, and I see this cropping up in science articles as well, and certainly this article I just read about psychoanalysis is that adopting a poetic mindset within these genres is crucial to actually evolving and getting more insight into the whatever it is you're after. I think, you know, because of the way that art is able to like interact with the ineffable aspects of existence.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of the times we're feeling so like such a hardship in uncovering these like sort of intangible aspects of the self, because we're so used to extracting ourselves or extracting pieces of ourselves to be used as examples of study. It's almost impossible to be objective in the study of something that doesn't take tangible form. So mm-hmm. it's really hard for us to meld the idea of thought and mind, which I do believe has its own energy, and like understand it as part of being us. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just this, like, because it's not a it doesn't have any physical sense to it.
I mean, the opposite would be right, is like looking in the mirror and saying, that's who I am. Right. I mean, that's pretty horrifying, because I think when we look, and I mean, and this, the same is with looking at the television and seeing the people portrayed on the television, when we say that is supposed to be me. I think a lot of like suffering, internal suffering, comes from like being so upset about that. Not even really in touch with why, mm-hmm. but that we're sort of offered that if that's who I am, that's myself. and it just being so falling short of what you, you know, just being so disappointing in a way, not because you're not beautiful like a model, but just that, yeah, because there is a sort of hideousness to it. There's such a limitation to it. You're not infinite. You're very limited in a body that will die, that is quick, that is everyday aging, that is in some ways completely unfamiliar and disconnected. Like, I think, God, we're really going down a bunch of rabbit holes here. But,
I know, and it's typical, but...
If, you know, I quoted James Barnes, who I'm going to interview next on this podcast, actually, who's this lovely young philosopher, psychoanalyst. But he had written a article that I found really inspiring and powerful about dualism and Descartes, and how he ruined our mental health. And, you know, he said, in the face of an indifferent and unresponsive world that neglects to render our experiences meaningful outside of our own minds, for nature as mechanism is powerless to do this, our minds have been left fixated on empty representations of a world that was once its source of being. So anyway, just getting back to the idea of this hugely irreconcilable rift between, in our mind, between us and everything else around us, is cause for some suffering.
It's like a perceived rift.
Right. That's exactly. It's a perceived, you know, well, there's the literal fact that a lot of us aren't actually physically in nature. So that part's not, but that is a constructed separation that we've created. The point also, is.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that the point of all of this is not just hypothetical philosophical musings, but that I think in a way our writing poetry and our making of art is our way of trying to reconcile that duality and explore it. And I think that dualism is obviously appears in nature everywhere. I mean, it is some like the building blocks of reality. So there is dualism. It's not that there's not that, but that it's almost as if having two separate things and seeing them as just completely separate is where the suffering is. But seeing the separate as also being the same, but just somehow, you know, it's like this idea of opposites actually having an incredible unity between them, which what's his face, 1970s hippie lecturer,
Alan Watts,
gets at in the quote from him too. So that opposites highlight an inner unity. So I think that inner unity is what poets are kind of striving to get at. That's just like highfalutin, but guess.
But it's not even. I mean, not to me. I think that inevitably, like, and not to bring it back to Teilhard again, but he says that.
Wait, like, Teilhard?
Teilhard, Desjardins.
Thinks it not to bring it back to Die Hard again. Die Hard. Like, oh, are you quoting Die Hard?
Well, yeah, no.
Go on. No, I think it's important. Yeah, go on.
And again, not to go down this rabbit hole for too much longer, but just that there is a constricting that's occurring within human beings. A constricting, and this sort of like web of thought and being is constricting to a point where inevitably we will see this ultimate unification. Now, and I speak this way without the scientific backing that he has, so I tend to sound a little bit like blown apart here, you know, in my thinking without the scientific knowledge that he has. Yeah. But I mean, I do think that I can feel it. I feel that on a daily basis, this sort of like stretch to something that's so much beyond myself, and that invigorates me in a way. Mm-hmm. But I do want to talk about your essay in more specific terms, if that's okay.
Yes, please.
So I read it again, and I just kept thinking that, you know, with your previous book and then this essay and other works that I've known you to do, I think a lot of the times your work has been placed in this sort of like container of despair as a way to better. But I feel like it's been used as a way to better understand grief, right? Mm. But I feel like with your work, despair is used as a device in which to break apart. Do you know what I mean? Mm. It's not despair for the sake of its own sake. It's like to be used as a bomb device or something to get at something better than itself. And I'm wondering about if you could talk about how you metabolize that sort of thinking into a poetry comic. Take that reality of despair and grief and insert it into the making of a poetry comic. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does entirely. For me, a poetry comic is such a perfect space in which to express certain griefs. And I think we all deal with grief more than we're in touch with, whether it's actually from losing somebody, which we will all experience, or it's simply from... which I explore a lot in my last poetry book, sort of grief for the living. Needless to say, I think there are certain things you can do with text, and there are certain things you can do with visual art and visual representation, and they both do it differently, and get different results depending on what it is you're actually trying to convey or what emotion you're trying to express. I think what I love about the poetry comics is that I'm able to physically show the body in a certain position. And I think when, you know, we talk about these issues of duality, there isn't a bigger duality or perceived duality, whatever you want to call it, between something more than the mind and the body. So in a way, it seems as if poetry comics are a kind of representation of mind and body, because you're seeing something physical and you're also seeing what may be occurring in the mind through text. Mm. But I like to show the frozen moments of anguish as it might be seen through the body, and especially when you're drawing, you can do things that the body couldn't do in real life, so you're able to have that that liberty from reality and express things more emotionally or subtly. You know, I think also there's an element of humor that comes through with comics no matter what you're doing. Comics are traditionally a humor-based thing, even though, you know, political or satirical or whatever. But there is always a sort of element of frivolity and fun with it, too. So I feel like the poetry comic is able to interact with that, so it's not as, I guess, dramatic.
It almost serves as like an entry point into a greater understanding, like that humor or that like sort of intrigue that gets created with a strange image is like a door or something.
Absolutely. And I'm like, and you're like constructing that door for the reader or the viewer to just step through on their own. But I don't, you know, it's, I see a lot of anguish in poetry today, and I would almost say I'd see more anger in poetry today than anguish. But I don't, for me, I don't want that to be in and of itself the only reality of the piece. I do want to think of it as just a reality of being alive, and that it's neither good nor bad, but it is simply something to, a tool to use to get at something more. In other words, like I do want to sort of transmute despair and reveal some truth in there that is not only despair, because what is only despair is just fucking despair, and that's, nobody wants that, you know, that's mm-hmm. death. You know, death, even creating spirit. Yeah, I mean, it's the death of the body and the spirit. You know, ultimately despair, suicide, I mean, that's the end. But I think art, poetry especially, plays in that area. But even creating anything in a way is antithetical to despair, because you are creating something, and that in itself is an action mm-hmm. to understand. I mean, it must be, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that in your poetry comics, you use despairing imagery to as a way to like call people in and then to have them sit there and expose whatever it is they're seeing for its truth, which is not solely despair, because being in soul despair, I don't think is even possible in a human being. There is always something before and after it. And I think that translates to any art that uses that as a catalyst for bringing in any sort of audience.
I mean, it's actually a very curious thing, is like, just in a way, despair is utterly private, because in a way, despair is, you're totally alone. Your feelings are that you are irredeemable and there's nothing that you or anyone else can do. In exploring it in art and presenting it, I mean, when you present art to somebody else, when you ship it out into the world, you are saying, this is no longer me, but this is something for somebody else that is not me. And there can be a great, there's a great empathy and catharsis in that, that is incredible. Of course, we've seen that a lot of artists and writers struggle greatly with despair, and sometimes despair wins, and they're not shipping art out into the world anymore. And that's probably the most devastating fear that I have, for sure.
Yeah.
Despair can win out, and they can stop making art. And sort True. Of live in an endless space of non-creation, but still being in the playing field of all these things that want to be expressed and explored through art, but are just sort of eating them alive from the inside out.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that like the energy of thought has to be purged somewhere, right? So if it's not outward, then it has to be inward, I guess. But
I know, and but I don't want anyone listening to this to think this is like, I hate when people think or write like their poetry and art is fucking you know, therapy session, like, place to just, like, barf up all their, like, hang-ups. You know, it's such a mythologized thing that, like, Anne Sexton's therapist told her to write poetry and whatnot, and I thank God that they did, but, and obviously we're saying that this is, that our mind is, it's so insane, because, like, for me, it is also infuriating when people act like it has nothing to do with it, because it has everything to do with it. Our whole experience of the world, how we were raised, what we've read, what we've done, what we haven't done, all informs how we make art. So it's completely our art, and especially for poets who deal in truth and yet not truth. So they deal in ambiguity. They deal in that place of meaning, but meaning not being straightforward, but they don't deal in a place of fiction, you know, and they don't deal, and they're not nonfiction writers. They're between the two. And, the more I've been thinking about it lately and writing about it, the more I think, but fucking true art and poetry is almost more us than we are, will ever be able to be in touch with. Simply because we are so locked into the literal and the narrative structure of reality that is limited. Yeah. So it's like these abstract surreal things are like actually very real. And even more real than our so-called straightforward science-based narrative, logical Vulcan shit, you know?
Yeah.
The Vulcans aren't logical. They're just assholes.
They're just unfeeling.
they feel so deeply, but they're just super repressed.
Yeah.
And we know how that goes.
Yeah. And also, you know, there is something to the idea that poets and artists are dealing in, like, trying to make sense of despair and sadness. And I think that, as much as I don't want that to be the pillar of this discussion, I don't think that it's something to shy away from either. I don't think it's all that there is, but I think by way of making art, we are attempting to dismantle this sort of, like, structural hold that these sort of questions about existence have on us. And so I don't think, I mean, I think that for me, I sort of feel like the anti-poem poet, where I do feel very cynical about feeding into that, like, sadness narrative. And I also am cynical about having these sort of, like, liminal space discussions that I find myself in all of the time, but that's only because I feel inevitably that they're not enough to answer the questions that I have. And so
they will never be answered.
They can never be answered. So I find myself in this sort of cyclical Ferris wheel type thing of, like, you know, being constantly let down by my inquisitions, but also being brought back up by them in the same time. I definitely think that, like, the momentum of upwardness is the exuberance that I feel from the questioning. And then the downward motion is the feeling of being let down by it. And that's okay. It's actually how I am sustaining.
Because what do you get to do when you're let down by something? You got to keep searching.
It's like fortuna real. You know, you just keep moving. And it's actually an exhilarating part of my existence. It's like the pinnacle of it. And I think that's the case for everybody, even people who aren't artists.
The QAnon people are basically doing that, but in a really fucked up way. You know, they're searching for connections between things, and they're searching for things unseen in society and between humanity. You know, they're like searching for the collective like truth. They're sorely misguided, but essentially there's a kind of poetry in it. It's bizarre to see. But yeah, I would say that I think it's very human and unique to the human to do that. And in that way, we are very isolated in this world because we don't see anything else in this world doing that.
In the essay, you talk about how because the comics rely on an element of image and sequence, even if the sequence is in like a single frame, that the poetry comic sort of distills this absurdity of the everyday into something we can actually see before us as like a mirrored observation of something that's intangible. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about how extracting those sequences can help you make better order of the world, or even do they help you make better order of your thoughts or your place in the world?
I think
sequences and containment.
Yeah. I mean, I think what artists come to understand is that you are in a way containing something that is uncontrollable. And there's a great satisfaction in being able to do that because you can actually look at it, and not only that, but other people can look at it, and therefore you can in a way be seen. And I think, you know, just metaphysically and mentally, we feel we understand subconsciously the absurd nature of existence. And that creates a lot of anxiety and confusion and isolation. But in creating something that feels contained, I think we can at least come a little bit closer to feeling like we understand something more about why we are. And I think ultimately we want to be seen by other people, and we'll never know what other people are seeing or feeling, or if it's the same things we are seeing and feeling. But if, you know, because it's indescribable, and it's so closed off to us in our conscious thinking mind, but it comes through in art, and then you're able to show it to somebody else and they're able to see it. So I just think this witnessing through a presented means, because it's like we can't fathom chaos, so, and it is overwhelming. So this, we have to figure out some way to contain it, you know, we have to figure out some way to make it presentable and calming and beautiful. So it's like, How can we show the absolute horror that is underlying our whole understanding of reality? And what I mean by that is that, like, I think at all times we're sort of vaguely aware of the hugeness of the universe and our smallness and our vulnerability and our that we know nothing about how bad it could get, that it could be darker than we've ever imagined, and that is completely possible. How can we live with that anxiety?
Or the opposite.
Or the opposite. Exactly. Like, we're not talking about just despair and sadness. We're talking about the inner unity of opposites, right? Yeah. So when talking about the incredible darkness that could be, we're also talking about the incredible bliss that also could be. Which we are, in a way, I think, searching for, feeling we don't deserve, feeling that we'll never get.
But in a way, we must feel like we may get it because we are making efforts toward it, right? I mean, like, every effort that we make.
Or it's Sisyphean and we'll never get there.
Right, but I think that, like, I think we talked about this before too, like, I expounded it on it in an email, just the idea of effort, and effort being equated to happiness or to a particular expectation that we may achieve something that we're making the effort for, which is to say that maybe with concerted effort to put ourselves out into the world, connect with people, make things, ask the questions, that with all of this happening, that there may be something, there may be some payoff from that. And there actually may be a payoff that's happening right now, and we don't even know it, you know?
Well, yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, it's happening. That's what we feel. You know, it's poetry, making poetry comics isn't, or, you know, and poetry isn't just some masochistic, you know, toiling. It's like, we do it because it, right, there's some sort of, like, payoff, right? There's some sort of, like, feeling of, like, wonder, like, holy shit, like, I did that. Like, I worked really hard on it, and I did it. And I don't even understand it all the way, you know?
Well, it's a relief.
It's like that. Yeah.
It's like a building up of energy, an expenditure, and then like a release from it. And maybe that release is bringing us closer to something more understandable, but something greater than ourselves. Like, these are the things that I tell myself about why I do any artistic thing or anything at all, really. That any effort I make can bring me closer to what it is I don't know. But,
And because that's, I feel like that's when the best work you can do is the work that feels unfamiliar when you look at, well, God, I don't even remember doing that, you know?
Yeah.
I did that. It's like, I don't know everything about what self is. Thank fucking God, you know?
Yeah. This sort of brings me into the next thing I wanted to ask you about with your essay, in the concept of what you refer to as closure, which I take to mean that it's like the perception, that perception might even be more informative than concrete knowledge itself. And so, like, what are we tapping into when we can perceive the whole through a part? Like, what sort of important information are we gaining from just the act of perceiving over the potential for concrete knowledge? What's the difference between the two in your estimation?
Well, the difference is that our concrete knowledge is already known, and it's something we have memorized. Whereas our perception is occurring and happening right now. So it's us creating. So the reader is the one who's creating meaning. They are just much creating the comic or the poem as we are. In fact, the poem is nothing without them creating. So it's leaving blank space for what isn't known. Right?
Yeah. I mean, I would say.
It's great because I think it, you know, I know science, you know, reading about the science practices, that that's a big problem, you know, with everybody's so clings to what's already known. That it's hard to move forward with things sometimes because you can't think alternatively about certain ideas. There's a lot of resistance to that, but that's completely understandable.
Or just our connection to the material, like material knowledge, material artifacts, and just capitalist materials. Like, we are so dependent on those things that it's very hard to trust when we are seeking knowledge that is not material, right?
Trust is the word, you know, and I think faith is another word to use here, where you have to adopt a position of trust and faith. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to absorb or comprehend or create meaning. It's simply because if we go into something thinking we already understand it with our knowledge that we already have, then why even read it in the first place? You know, it's why even try. I mean, it's the parallel is the self, because if you're ever in therapy and have a good therapist, then you quickly understand that there's so much that you don't know about yourself. And if you don't try and forget everything that you think you know about why things are, then you're never going to get anywhere. And I think people approaching poetry have this problem too, because they think, I don't understand what this means. And they're basing all their rubric on how they've learned how to approach text in school, which is to get information, to do a task. And that's not how poetry functions. It's not there to give you information so that you can understand how to do a task, so that you can be a good citizen. It's there to offer you an opportunity to make meaning and to have a closer relationship with the subtleties of language and feeling and experience. So it's basically impossible for some people to do, which is fine. They can find other outlets, but you have to be able to suspend your previous knowledge and adopt a sort of oscillating, suspended mental position,
right?
Where you're able to really see the work. And I'm talking about, you know, good poetry. I'm not talking about shitty poetry.
Yeah.
But that should go without saying.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, there's most poetry, you really don't have to adopt an oscillating mental position to understand. You know, a lot of poetry that you see out there is pretty surface level, but not, I mean, then a shit ton of it is also, quote unquote,
brilliant,
complex,
that we'll never see, honestly. I think, you know, I said, I think also a lot of it is brilliant, and brilliant work that we'll never see, you know, and right. That's sad to me. But I think even those people who claim to not understand poetry just lack a trust in their own ability to synthesize knowledge on their own. And that is a disability that we've been taught, you know?
Right.
We've been taught that Absolutely. Disability of how to disable our own minds from synthesizing knowledge for ourselves.
Absolutely. We're taught not to trust
right
our own ideas about, I mean, they don't present it as that. They present it, everybody's an individual and we all care about all your ideas, which is such bullshit.
Yeah. I'm so afraid of what the school systems will do to our babies. I'm wondering about how to navigate that, but I digress. But I guess that's where we come in. That's where we meet. Where we meet where there is a deficit.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's something to remember too, because I think a lot of us go around not sharing this with our closest people around us. And I think that's a disservice to our children and to our families and friends that, well, probably our friends are more likely. I only say this because I know a lot of poets do sort of keep this from their children. I don't know why, because, well, I do know why, because we're taught that that's not learning. And mm-hmm. even poets who understand this in their own work don't understand it in their life. We don't translate our knowledge of how a language works onto how reality works and how relationships work. I've been noticing things about this myself. I'm like, why don't I approach this like I approach poetry? And I'm like, oh, right. Can you just say thanks so much, Bianca? Goodbye.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Bianca. Bye.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Bye.
They want to know which tools. They never ask why build.